Many bars have regulars who never seem to leave, even after hundreds of years. And to that point, from the United States to Australia, these haunted bars claim to be home to a number of ghostly beings, according to Julie Reiger, author of The Ghost Photographer and co-host of the podcast Insider's Guide to the Other Side. Ghosts and other spiritual entities are 100% real. When asked why a ghost might want to stick around long after they've passed, Reiger says there are several reasons. A person may have suffered a quick, violent death, so their spirit might not realize they've died, she says. Or spirits might stick around because they're attached to a particular location. If bars have issues with their invisible occupants, Reiger recommends writing a list of ghost rules and signing it to set boundaries of what's okay and what's not. And whether or not you believe in ghosts or you're just seeking a new spot to grab a drink, you can check out this story for the top five haunted bars around the world in the news section up at coasttocoastam.com. And if you like what you're hearing tonight, this morning, and you want to find out more about what I do, you can go to my website, strangeplanet.ca. Strangeplanet.ca. It's all right there, my weekly syndicated radio program, The Conspiracy Show, which airs Sunday nights at 11 p.m. on Zoomer Radio in Toronto. My podcast, Conspiracy Unlimited, which drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can go to strangeplanet.ca. And while you're there, just take a moment, and up at the top, you can click on that box that says subscribe to my newsletter, Inner Sanctum. Just takes but a moment. All I need is your email address, and then Inner Sanctum, my free monthly newsletter, will be delivered to your email inbox every month. Strangeplanet.ca. Back to more of my conversation with Jeffrey K. Lyons as he takes a critical view of neo-Darwinism right here on Coast to Coast AM. Jeffrey, before we proceed, did you want to pick up on any other points? Before the break, we were talking about how evolution could explain the development of multi-celled organisms from a single-celled organism, and you said that's just, it's never been proven. Did you want to offer anything else before I move on to another point?
Oh, yeah, there's quite a lot there. Actually, there's two steps. Bacteria are the first step. The second step that they identify are cells with a nucleus. Okay, cells with a nucleus, but still a single cell. So we talk about an amoeba. That's one example. And then there's multi-cells with nucleuses, which is you and me. If we didn't have multi-cells, we wouldn't be here. We'd still be back to bacteria, according to evolutionists. It's not a story I believe, but let me pick it up with Ernst Mayr. Now, he's an evolutionary biologist, very well known. He wrote a book called What Evolution Is. And Mayr says the origin of the eukaryotes, okay, those are the cells that have a nucleus. He says it's arguably the most important event in the whole history of life on Earth. Now, that's a huge statement. And most people pay for 4 years of college and they've never heard of this. But he said this is the most important event of life on Earth. Why? Because we have in our bodies cells with nucleuses. So without a cell with a nucleus, you and I wouldn't be having a conversation. But the difference between bacteria and a cell with a nucleus is so profound. Here's another scientist, biochemist, Nick Lane. And all of these sources are in my book, Evolution Myths, Critical View of Neo-Darwinism. I cite about 275 scientific references. Nick Lane says, put another way, a eukaryote cell, that's a cell with a nucleus, commands 200 times more energy than a prokaryote gene. Okay, that's the cell that's like bacteria, prokaryotes. Eukaryote could, in principle, support 200,000 times larger. He says it's a problem of complexity. he said they rarely exhibit one complex or two complex traits. So how did they get 200,000 times more complex? They have no idea. And then Lane goes on and he says eukaryote common ancestor increased its genetic repertoire 3,000 novel gene families. Suddenly, it's like a car that suddenly has 3,000 more parts to it. You know, how does that happen? The invention of new protein folds in the eukaryotes, look what he says, sounds a lot like Ernst Mayr. He says it's the most intense phase of gene invention since the origin of life. Interesting that he used the term invention because it takes intelligence to invent something. So it's hard for us to wrap our minds around this, but what they're saying is it took a jump from something like a mousetrap to a Saturn V rocket, and they have absolutely no explanation where the complexity came from, where the DNA programming came from, where the energy came from, absolutely no idea. So, they know there's multicellular creatures. They can find these things in the fossil records. They can map out a timeline, but they don't know how one changed from another. So it's a huge hole in the evolutionary story, as I put it.
Critics of evolution will often talk about irreducible complexity. And you mentioned a mousetrap just a moment, which is a perfect example. If you take any of its component parts, it will not function. It has been reduced to the minimum number of necessary components in order to work and function properly. That's irreducible complexity. So take that into the world of biology and talk to me about how irreducible complexity argues against evolution.
Well, Michael Behe is the one that put forth this argument brilliantly. He's a microbiologist. He wrote a book called Darwin's Black Box, and he's written a few books. But basically, he's saying that there are certain components that you need for life to exist, certain things. And when you take apart that component, there is no life. It doesn't exist. So what he argues is that there's no way to make the jump. Of course, what I was reading from biochemist Nick Lane, he was saying that something got 200, the jump from a bacteria to a cell with a nucleus suddenly got 200,000 times more energy, 200,000 times more complex, and needed 3,000 novel gene families. So it's jumping, like we said, from a mousetrap to a Saturn V rocket. And how does that happen? You need all of that information in order to have a cell with a nucleus. But here's another thing where the evolution story completely falls apart. Evolution says that there's this idea of survival of the fittest, which really Darwin didn't come up with that term. It was Herbert Spencer, the sociologist and philosopher. If a bacteria competes with a bacteria, what are you going to get? Well, you're going to get better bacteria. That's what Darwin would predict, and that's what natural selection would predict, and evolution. Bacteria competing with bacteria are not going to get 500 times larger and have 3,000 new gene families. That is absolutely not what evolution would predict. But that's only the jump to a one cell with one nucleus. Now you have a jump from you go another billion years, and you go from a cell with a nucleus, and I'm giving time scales that evolutionists give. You have now a jump from a cell with a nucleus to a cell with a nucleus that can divide. And so you have multi-celled creatures like you and me. why would one cell with a nucleus competing with one cell with a nucleus become a cell which is multi-cell? It doesn't make any sense. Of course, we'll probably have callers that say that does make sense, but it's storytelling. All of it is storytelling, and it's never been observed. Biologists are absolutely befuddled. You have to dig into the literature to find this information. It took me 7 years to write this book because I searched the scientific journals. So that's why this is not common information that's out there. But none of it is from people that are church-going people or have a religious reason to criticize evolution. These are from scientists. And they're saying, hey, this theory is really in trouble.
The second law of thermodynamics, the idea that this basic universal law of decay, all things tend towards decay, that would stand to reason to argue against evolution as well, wouldn't it? I mean, if things tend towards decay and inefficiencies, and you know, energy sort of, you know, it argues against, obviously, you can't have perpetual energy. Wouldn't you need a tremendous input of energy in order to sort of fuel the evolutionary process?
Yeah, you would need energy, and you would need more coding and more software, which takes an intelligent designer. But that argument of the second law of thermodynamics, that's been voiced many times. It's a common argument against evolutionary theory. Decay is normal. I have another book here. I'm a book person. When Life Nearly Died, this is by a geologist, Michael Benton. And what Benton says is that there have been many extinctions, mass extinctions, the dinosaurs 65 million years ago, but there was an even bigger extinction 251 million years ago in the Permian period. And at that time, 90% of all life was destroyed. So, you know, they try to tell us that life is getting more diverse and more diverse. You and I, according to what the geologist, Michael Benton, says, what we see around us, the life we see around us, he says, is the result of 10% survival. In other words, 90% of all life has gotten wiped out. Wiped out. But what doesn't make sense is that why are there so many creatures that are called living fossils? That's another interesting topic. The horseshoe crab, the alligator, the cockroach, the dragonfly, the soft-shelled turtle, the gar, the jellyfish. It goes on and on and on. You've got creatures that go all the way back to the Cambrian explosion, 250 million years or even older. My favorite is the coelacanth, which is a fish. They thought it was extinct. They found it in the 1930s. It's swimming around. It's doing great. It's a 200-pound fish, but it's very deep in the ocean in Indonesia. So the argument that things change over time, here's many, many, many things. I could go on and on all night. There are things that just don't change. So why do they not change? Again, scientists have no explanation, but very easy to look up. All of these things I just mentioned. There's a great book, Horseshoe Crabs and Velvet Worms, Richard Forty. And he doesn't have a religious axe to grind. He's just saying, here they are in the geological record. So if we're told that things change over time and everything does, that simply is not true either.
I'm looking at a headline here from the New York Times from May of 2019. Scientists created bacteria with a synthetic genome. And then a similar article, the same from November of 2018, synthetic life made from scratch. Synthetic life made from scratch. Now, would that not suggest then is that not an example of abiogenesis, creating life from non-life? And if man can do it in a lab, haven't we proven then one aspect of evolution?
Yeah, I'd really have to look at the article to comment on it. You know, my guess is that there was some gene splicing that went on, and that you know, they took something that was living and they created something else. However, let's say they didn't take something that was living. You've got scientists in a lab claiming to make life. That's a perfect example of an intelligent designer. So we're back to life needs an intelligent designer. What has never happened is people have never been able to just sit by a pond of water and see life popping out of it. It has never happened, never been observed. So we're still back to we can't explain life. But that was a great example you gave, because basically it was human beings imposing something in an experiment and designing it and then claiming to have life. But I'd really have to read the article to dig a little deeper.
The idea of a universal common ancestor, the idea that all of the complex organisms that exist today sprang forth from one common ancestor. Do we know what that common ancestor was or is? Was it bacteria? Was it a germ?
Yeah. Again, we have absolutely no idea. We have a story, and we know that bacteria are the oldest living thing that's been found in a fossilized form, that sort of thing. They've even brought bacteria back to life, which was in material which they claim to be 250 million years old. And it came back to life. That's been written up and published in articles. The idea of the LUCA, the last universal common ancestor, Darwin had a tree, one diagram in his entire book on the origin of species, and it was a phylogenic tree, which we call the tree of life, but biologists call it the phylogenic tree. And he showed two trees and then sprouting forth to life. And he has no evidence for this, that's the whole idea of the last universal common ancestor. Their guesses about RNA and DNA, this sort of thing. But no, again, they're completely befuddled in terms of the coding, the DNA. That's the problem. And it takes an intelligent designer to make software. We're back to the same question we talked about on the other hour is, would you buy a computer from me if I sold it to you for $500? And I said, there's absolutely no software. Nobody's developed it, and it's not coming.
It's kind of like the argument of you put a million chimpanzees in a room with a million typewriters, and eventually, maybe after a million years, they'll produce something approximating the work of William Shakespeare. We're going to take another time out, and we're going to open up the phone lines and take questions and comments, and I'm sure there will be more than a few challenges to your position, Jeffrey. So hold on for that. Welcome back. Say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett. Coast to Coast AM is looking for your best scary or spooky tale for our Ghost to Ghost Halloween show on Friday, October the 30th. You can send your scariest story along with your phone number to halloweenstory@coasttocoastam.com. Again, send your scariest story along with your phone number. Don't forget the phone number, to halloweenstory@coasttocoastam.com, and we just might pick you to read yours live on the air. And also for Halloween, we're seeking your spookiest artwork for a special Coast to Coast gallery. Selected image will be posted on the Coast website during Halloween week. You can send to submissions@coasttocoastam.com. Again, you'll send your artwork to submissions@coasttocoastam.com, and let us know If you'd like us to include your email address and or website for inspiration, you can check out last year's gallery at coasttocoastam.com. Your questions and comments for Jeffrey K. Lyons, the author of Evolution Myths, A Critical View of Neo-Darwinism. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. So, Jeffrey, before we dip into the phone calls, I just want to run this by you. This is, again, something that's often used to try and debunk evolution. The idea, well, first of all, if I'm not mistaken, evolution doesn't actually teach that humans descended from monkeys. It says that monkeys and humans have a common ancestor, correct?
Right.
Is that fair to say?
Sure.
Okay. So then the, right. So we didn't, it's not teaching us that we, or it's not theorizing we evolved from monkeys. It says that monkeys and humans had a common ancestor. And then the idea that, well, you know, if we evolved from a common ancestor or if we evolved from monkeys, it's like saying, well, if children descended from adults, why are there still adults? Do you follow what I'm saying? In other words, people that are critical of evolution say, if we descended from this species, why does that species still exist?
Right, right. That's a great argument, because they've looked at bacteria, which they say are the first form of life on Earth. And they throw out timescales like 3.5 to 3.7 billion years old. But when they look at it morphologically, the structure of the bacteria, and they can find it in frozen ice, shale, that sort of thing, up north in Canada, in fact, it hasn't changed. In fact, it looks exactly like modern-day bacteria. So then the argument or the question, because good science asks questions, is why has the bacteria not changed over 3.5, 3.7 billion years? And they don't know.
But again, I did a horrible job in trying to explain the counter argument, and that is that it's like arguing that if children descend from adults, why are there still adults? In other words, new species evolve by splintering off from established ones. So a population of an organism, it might become, let's say, isolated from the main branch, and then they acquire differences, and they remain distinct after that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, it comes down to storytelling. Who's got the better story of, you know, this happened and then that happened? And biologists argue about the phylogenetic tree. They're always adjusting it, you know. This didn't precede that. This didn't precede that. This is connected to that. They don't agree with each other. So I don't know if I'm answering your question, but the questioning continues, and it should continue, because the science is very weak.
All right, let's go to the wild card line. Jack is in Texas. Jack, welcome to Coast. You're on with Jeffrey Lyons.
Hey, well, I don't think science is weak. I think all branches of science prove evolution is a fact. Geology, biology, anthropology. The data is in the strata of the Earth. The layers of time, you can trace the transitional species are right where they need to be, right in the places they should be. And, you know, this is just the same old God is in the butt crack of science stuff, you know.
Yeah.
I'm sure your Discovery Institute is paying your salary.
No, I have nothing to do with Discovery Institute, absolutely nothing. Let me ask you this question. When did you first accept evolution? How old were you?
Probably 7 or 8 years old. I think I was a Christian for maybe 2 or 3 days, I think, in there.
Okay. Let me ask you this question. If I told you that evolution is a materialistic theory, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm trying to explain when I say evolution is a materialistic theory?
Yeah, it exists. Truth exists.
No. Materialism is a philosophy, And basically, those that believe in neo-Darwinism, Darwinism, evolution, they believe that everything is strictly material. In other words, it can be seen, it can be touched, it can be measured, it can be observed empirically. The problem with evolution is that it boxes itself into the corner, paints itself into the corner. If everything is materialistic, then how do you explain that which is metaphysical? For example, how do you explain mind? How do you explain language? And more importantly, how do you explain the coding behind DNA? I was saying to Richard earlier in the broadcast, would he buy a computer from me if it had no software? And of course, Richard said no. And scientists have absolutely no explanation for the coding behind the DNA. Why? Because coding takes an intelligent designer. Francis Crick saw that. He's the person who discovered DNA and got the Nobel Prize. He was an atheist, so Crick said, well, life must have come from another planet. It's the kicking of the football that life came from another planet. But in any case, the problem with evolution is it has no explanation for metaphysics, for that which is not material, because it basically defines metaphysic as not existing. In other words, you don't have free will, you don't have a mind, we don't know how language got here, no explanation. So I just challenge you to, you know, think about some of those things. I'm not trying to change your mind, but I'm trying to get you to think about some of those things.
Thanks for the call, Jack. But to Jack's point about, you know, transitional fossils existing, or transitional organisms existing in the fossil record. Aren't there examples of transitional organisms in the fossil record which would tend to support evolution?
You know, there are examples in the literature. Yes, he's absolutely right. And but, you know, I get back to the example I gave, you know, earlier about would you believe me if I said I was a Mayflower descendant? And we said, well, you know, I need more evidence than that. And I said, well, I've been able to produce all the birth records. There is no stream of birth records going back 3.7 billion years from organism to organism to organism. It doesn't exist. So, yes, there's fossils. And, yes, there's stories about this connected to that. But there's no stream, and as I've said, there's absolutely no explanation, even from going from a bacteria to a cell with a nucleus. There's no transitional fossil. It doesn't exist.
All right, to the wild card line we go. Carlos is in Carson, California. Carlos, welcome to Coast.
Good evening, gentlemen. Very interesting topic. Question for Jeffrey, I'm a creationist. The human body is too complex just to evolve randomly. But my question is this. Do you suppose the Illuminati hijacked the evolutionary movement to cast doubt on the existence of God? Illuminism, which is the philosophy of the Illuminati, it says that mankind is God, and that's what they want to lead everybody to believe, that there's no external God out there, that we ourselves are God. So do you, and also there was a geneticist who was doing working on genetic experimentation there, the early 1900s, named Galton, who was working on experiments to, of course, kill off the infirm, the mentally retarded, the inferior, so on and so on. But he was related to Darwin. So I can see the hand of the Illuminati in this whole concept of evolution.
Well, yeah, you bring up some good points. To your second point, eugenics. Very well documented. In fact, there's a lot that's been coming out about Margaret Sanger lately. She was a eugenicist, and she's now been universally condemned as a racist. And you're right, there is a connection between Darwin and eugenics. That is true. In terms of the Illuminati connection, I just can't comment, not because I don't want to comment, but I haven't researched it. But the bigger question is the moral implications. I think that's what you're kind of getting to. And if human beings are nothing but something that is the product of chance, well, then yes, the moral implications are profound. There's a book called Darwin to Hitler that your listeners, Richard, might want to listen to. And there's many connections with different dictators that have embraced evolutionary theory. Hitler was one of them, Stalin and different ones, Lenin. But it's a perfect sort of explanation or a reason why justification is what I'm looking for to murder people to bring about your
right. This is
utopia if we're all just here by chance.
That's certainly one of the unintended consequences, I think, of Darwinism. Obviously, he never intended for that, but this justification, the survival of the fittest, might makes right, which was used, the social Darwinism, in other words, which has been embraced not only by authoritarians, but, you know, by others. Yeah, you know,
it's actually worse than that, Richard. If most people aren't familiar with Darwin's next work, which was The Descent of Man, and Darwin talked about people in South America and different people around the world, and he called them the lower races. I mean, he was clearly you know, in today's geopolitical atmosphere, he was clearly a racist, and he goes into detail in that book, Descent of Man. So not only I would actually argue that, yeah, Darwin not only knew what he was doing, but he was promoting racism. You know, that could be a future show, but it's in his book, Descent of Man, and it's not a secret. It's out there.
All right. Let's say hi to Richard west of the Rockies in Santa Monica, California. Richard, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Good morning, guys. What a great show. Richard, you're doing a good job of setting the table.
Thank you very much.
It's interesting you're dancing around the where monkeys and humans have a common ancestor. I was wondering, Jeffrey, what you think about the Sumerian cuneiforms that talk about the injection of DNA by the with the Anunnaki, and that they're the first writers, the Sumerians. And it's quite interesting how that why that happens. So with God and like DNA, what's your take on that? With that being, I'm a history teacher, and that's the most amazing thing I've ever heard. So what's your take on with God and DNA?
Are you referring to the descendants of Anak, the Nephilim? Is that what you're referring to?
But that's in the same ballpark. I didn't go Nephilim, but But still,
so the idea that modern man is the product of a genetic experiment, crossbreeding between extraterrestrials and some primitive, hominid here on Earth.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a lot of stuff on that on the History Channel. It's become the Alien Channel, and you know, it's interesting. There's a lot of theories out there. It's hard to kind of, with the time we have left, pick that apart. For myself, I do believe that that human beings are created in the image of God. And I disclosed earlier in the broadcast that I'm a Christian. So as being created in the image of God, we're different than animals. So I would strongly disagree with Darwin that we're here just by a product of chance, although he does mention there's a creator, but he doesn't know who it is. So Darwin's a bit confused on that. But in terms of the Sumerians and the cuneiform, what you're referring to, I haven't looked into that in particular, but I know there's a lot of information out there. It's good to be curious and read about it. I am familiar with Anak, the Nephilim, giants on Earth, that sort of thing. And the Bible does talk about that. In fact, I think you've had shows about that, haven't you, Richard?
Oh, I'm sure. Yes, that show has surfaced on my program and, of course, Coast to Coast many, many times. It's a fascinating arena, to be sure. How do people get a copy of Evolution Myths?
You can just go to the Amazon website or any major bookseller, Barnes & Noble. They all have it. Even Target has it. But Evolution Myths, A Critical View of Neo-Darwinism. You can check out my website, which is just evolutionmyths.com, and you'll see more links there. Lately, I've been spending time on my Facebook page and having conversations with people, and it's just very interesting. My goal is not to get everybody to agree with me, but to at least think critically. That's the whole point. To peel back the curtain, as in the Wizard of Oz. When they said, "Don't look at the man behind the curtain," I'm saying, "Look at the man behind the curtain," because I'm arguing that the story of evolution is really the story of the emperor with no clothes. There's a lot of scientific research in my book, 275 citations, all from scholarly sources, none of them from Christian sources or Christian-funded sources. These are just scientists out there, and most of them are atheists and just biologists and people all that right. agree with evolution, and they're saying there's a huge problem out there.
Evolution Myths. Jeffrey, thank you so much. Always a pleasure. For George Norrie, George Knapp, Lisa Lyons, Stephanie Smith, Tom Danheiser, Dan Galanti, Donna Walker, Sean Latasor, and Chris Burrows, and in Brantford, Ontario, Scott Parks, I'm Richard Serrett. Thank you for your ears and your voices, your beautiful voices. Until next time, so long for now.